folding pocket.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome back to The Fast and the Curious with me, Betty Glover.
Are you okay?
No.
Do you want to explain what's just happened before we started recording? And by the way, this is staying in the episode. Go on.
Oh, just sort of clapped and hit the microphone in my face.
So when we start an episode recording, to make sure the camera and the sound is synced together, Betty tends to clap. And in this week's episode, Betty's managed to start The Fast and the Curious by hitting herself in the face with a microphone.
So that's a good start, isn't it? This is going to be a good episode, I think. Anyway, you're Christian Hugill.
I am Christian Hugill still, yes.
Self-acclaimed Formula One expert.
Well, Greg acclaims me as a Formula One expert, really. I always get worried about this every time people describe me as a Formula One expert. But I like it, put it that way.
I think you are a Formula One expert.
Well, thanks,
you've got
mate.
The most amazing Formula One brain.
Oh, that's nice.
It's true, isn't it?
I also chaperone a dinky driver, but more on that later.
Yeah, we are going to talk about that in a moment. But welcome to the podcast. If you're new here, we like to sort of get in the brains of the Formula One world. Hmm. Is that a sentence? Speak to people from across the paddock, whether it be a driver, whether it be someone within the team, a team principal, and just all of those different personalities around the world of Formula One. We're usually joined by our team principal, Greg James, but he's not here today, so it's just me and you.
He's gone canoeing with Matt Edmondson. That's where Greg is.
Right, so we're going to explain your dinky driver situation in a moment.
Yeah, we'll do some dinky driving in a moment. What else we got coming up? We've got loads on today.
So, if you saw Alex Albon's incredible helmet, panda helmet, at the China Grand Prix, we are going to investigate that a little further and speak to the guy that actually designed it. So that's very exciting, isn't it?
Oh, it was one of my favourites ever. Although, I'm going to be really careful what I say. I think it was last year in Miami, Lando had the basketball helmet.
Oh, yeah.
And I tweeted that it was a bit tongue-in-cheek. I was like, this is the greatest helmet in Formula One history. And I had these tedious nerds tweet me, being like, what about Senna in 1986? And I got, honestly, so much hate from this tweet. Because I was like, you're right, yes, fine. And no, I appreciate it. It's not one of the iconic ones. It's a basketball, but I was having a joke. So I loved the panda helmet and was about to say it's one of my favourites ever. But if I do that, this will get put up on Instagram and all the nerds will go, what about Hakkinen in 2001? And I was like, oh, yeah, fine. I enjoyed the helmet.
Well, good. I'm glad you got that off your chest. I enjoyed the helmet. I thought it was wicked.
It was very funny. It was good.
If you had a helmet, what would you have on it?
Ooh, great question. A golden retriever.
Oh, why?
Because I like golden retrievers. If Alex could have a panda off of China, I could have a golden retriever.
Oh, excellent. Mm. And also, we are the sort of filling in the Formula One sprint race
sandwich.
So we're also going to talk about Formula One sprint races. Because
if you could be a filling in a sandwich, what filling would you be?
I think I'd be like jam.
Jam?
Because everyone
funny.
Likes jam.
Yeah, they do.
And
that's
it true. Might not be
traditional. Funny God. Couldn't even get to the end of the explanation. Right.
I think I'd be cheese and pickle.
Oh, that was a U-turn. Right, okay.
Yeah, because I think jam, everyone likes it though, don't they?
Right, okay, good.
Should we move on?
Let's move on.
Let's start. Okay, but first, Christian's just got the small matter of talking.
Small matter. Small matter.
Clever.
Small matter, because it's a small driver.
Yeah, thank you.
Good that.
Of talking about his little dinky driver. Go on. Jimmy's just lost it. Jimmy, you've got a dirty mind. Go on then, Christian. Get everyone up to speed.
A very observant listener, Sarah, noticed in my soundproofing in the home studio, I'm not going to throw to myself at home, don't worry, that there was a dinky driver had been placed there, and it was a gift from my friend Chris. And Sarah guessed that whether it was George Russell or not, and it's become a bit of a thing of its own right, and it's become the dinky driver. Now, it wasn't George Russell, and also, what else happened? You went for Zhou Guan Yu. It wasn't Zhou Guan Yu.
Just a stab in the dark. I didn't have the big clue, though.
What was the big clue? We weren't given any clues. That was supposed to be hard.
No, we've had clues since.
Yeah, well, I'm getting to that.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, when I did that guess, I hadn't heard the clue.
It was a rubbish guess. Stop digging yourself more of a hole. So Lydia had a much better guess than Zhou Guan Yu. Lydia thought it was Fangio. In our China's debrief, Laura Winter thought it was Kimi Räikkönen. Again, could have been Kimi because it was found in an antique shop. We know the person's European.
Yes, so I didn't know that, obviously, and I didn't know antique shop.
Stop making excuses. People look at themselves and their own performance in Formula One first, rather than trying to blame the surroundings.
Yeah.
You need to know. You need to remember that. So that's where we are on Guess the Dinky Driver, and we are going to be getting a listener on each and every week until it's guessed. There's been lots of guesses on social media. They don't count. It's whoever comes onto the podcast to guess. Now, this is very exciting. I mean, it's exciting anyway, because it's probably one of the greatest features ever to be made into audio. But it's particularly exciting because the author of the feature, is that the right word? Do you know what I mean? The person who came up with it all.
The person who's responsible for this bloody feature that we've got to play each week.
Is on the line for us now. Sarah, welcome, because we've not spoke to you in person yet. Sarah, welcome to the Fast and the Curious.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah, just let me, let's start at the beginning. How much has Dinky Driver changed your life? Are you surprised at sort of what a cultural phenomenon it's become as it's gripped the internet, gripped the wider Formula One world?
Of course, yeah. It was just, me and my partner thought it was potentially George Russell, you know, doing his pose in between your little side proofing. And now we just keep trying to make different guesses and watching the episodes to see who has guessed, and trying to narrow it down.
Well, could you have imagined that it would, when you had that thought, when you were watching together, that it could have become such a big part of life and culture?
No, that's not what I thought. I just sent a message just hoping that you would maybe tell us, and it's now turned into this.
Does Sarah get an actual proper guess? Because her guess didn't count, did it? Because it was on Instagram.
No. All right. And we now have actual clues. So, Sarah, we've all just been through what with all the clues. So we're going to invite you to have a proper guess. So let's come back to Guess the Dinky Driver. Attention music, please. Thank you. Stop laughing, it will kill the tension. Sarah, please guess the Dinky Driver.
So my official guess will be Damon Hill.
Damon Hill, you say? The 1996 Formula One World Champion, Damon Hill. Often featured on Sky Sports F1 as a pundit. Damon Hill. Likes a surfing weekend, Damon Hill, I'm reliably informed. But is he the Dinky Driver? Sarah? Sarah?
Yep.
I can exclusively reveal
on
The Fast and the Curious that you are, Sarah, right, it's Damon Hill! Yay! Damon Hill! Oh, I've got confetti in my mouth.
Sarah, how do you feel that you finally ended this nightmare that I've had to sit through for the last however many weeks?
I feel bad for Betty, but I'm glad we've got the answers that we're after.
Congratulations. I've got it in my hand, actually.
Pass me Dinky Driver. Dinky Driver, it's great to have you on the podcast. Thanks for coming on in person. Dinky Driver, how do you feel to have been revealed?
No, this is actually horrific.
He says he can't believe what a phenomenon it's become, and he thinks I'm very good looking.
Right, I'm moving this on. Sarah, well done. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Sarah, would you like to say anything to Dinky Driver before you go?
I'm glad we've managed to have this opportunity, and you can go back to your soundproofing.
Hang on.
Sarah, you're talking to a fake doll.
He says, Sarah, it's an absolute pleasure, and he thanks you for your observance.
I'm glad.
Oh, God.
Sarah, thank you for, you know, helping play a part in audio history. And thank you for coming on. And, you know, it's fitting because you sort of started it all and you ended it all with the right guest. So Dinky Driver, thanks you, Sarah.
Perfect. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Sarah. You'll be forever part of this podcast history. Take care.
Perfect. Thank you. Bye.
Bye, Sarah.
Bye.
Bye.
There is the Dinky Driver in all his glory. Dinky Damon, the Dinky Driver on the Fast and the Curious. I've got quite a lot of confetti on me.
Oh, God.
What?
All right, Christian, have you calmed down? Have you sort of regained sense of self?
I've still got quite a lot of confetti on me, but that's fine.
Yeah, well, next, we're going to talk about something that actually affects proper, real-life sized drivers, you'll all be pleased to know.
Real-life sized drivers.
If anyone was watching the Chinese Grand Prix, which I hope you all were, you would have noticed Alex Albon's incredible panda helmet, which you said was the best ever.
Yeah, I mean, I got in trouble. Well, let's go. I'll put this to our guest. Betty, would you like to introduce who we've got? Because I want to say this to our special guest.
Okay, go on then. So we have got Miles Murphy from MDM Designs, the lad that actually designed Alex Albon's helmet. Miles, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Plodding along. It's one of those, it's the time of year where it's slightly easier for us. Because like they're basically between like Christmas and March is just pure chaos. As in the lovely world of Formula One, everything is last minute and everything is now or yesterday.
Well, we'll get onto your schedule in a minute because you've actually just hit on something that's really interesting there in terms of actual Formula One land. But to stay with the silliness for a little bit, I don't know whether it was one of your designs, Miles, but we said this earlier on the podcast, I got into a load of trouble on Twitter for when Lando Norris had a basketball design for Miami last year.
Did that as well.
Well, I said on Twitter,
of course
Twitter,
he did. He does all the good ones, Miles.
I said on Twitter, that's the best F1 helmet in history, with slight tongue-in-cheek, just because I thought it was really cool. I got so much trolling from people being like, well, you've missed off this particular classic from the 80s. So I'm being very careful in my praise, Miles. I adored the panda helmet. The driver cam, it looking back and there being a panda there, was absolutely hilarious. So thank you for bringing that into our lives. I loved it, but I'm equally not going to say it's the greatest in history because I just get trolled again.
Don't say anything's a favourite or the best on Twitter. It's like throwing a hand grenade and running, really, isn't it?
Exactly.
But everyone's right to their own opinion, so someone might think it's terrible, somebody might think it's great, others won't care. It's just how it goes. Alex liked it. That's the main thing for me.
So did Alex come to you saying, look, I want a panda on my helmet? Or did you say to Alex, I think this would be a really cool design? How did it even come about?
How it normally starts is you'll get a list of the events I think these special races for. And then Alex was typing some ideas. To be fair, the panda was like all his idea. It was just how you actually put it on. Because originally we thought, oh, should we do a realistic panda or should we do like a full cartoon one? And in the end, we went for this like almost anime style one. And we thought, on there, we'll just make the whole helmet look like a panda. Because he actually inspirations from Valentino Rossi. Do you remember when he had the donkey helmet on?
I forgot all about that. Yeah.
Because that was from the front on. It was just a donkey in your face, and we knew it would just get a reaction. And thinking of giant panda, China, it's come back. It just made perfect sense to get as much exposure for it as possible by doing that. It's actually such a simple design. But I thought it worked
quite well. Perfect. It works so well purely for the front-facing camera. Because in the old days, you'd only get the cameras that were sort of behind them. But now you get the ones facing forwards. The way the panda with the eyes just looked into the camera was utterly hilarious. But it also, I think, fitted Alex rather well. Because Alex is a regular on this podcast and he's got a brilliant sense of humour and is very funny and doesn't take him too seriously.
It's really, really good because you can just come out with like some daft ideas and we'll find a way then to make it look really, really good. And it reflects his personality so well. There's a couple more coming later in the year, which will be on the similar sort of line, but I won't give anything away.
Oh, brilliant.
Some are a bit more, they want to be more conservative, some will be more adventurous. It's just nice to have a variance, really.
So you have done helmets for so many drivers. Go on, give us some names, because you're a very popular man, aren't you?
I've never said something before. So we do Fernando's, Oscar's, George's, Alex's, Esteban's and Checo's at the moment. We've been doing Lando's for years. We've got one we'll be doing later in the year, which will be his quadrant one. And we also did his Gilles de Ferran one this year. So yeah, we've done quite a few of them. They definitely keep me busy.
Speaking of being kept busy, this interests me because a few things have changed in F1 since when I first started watching. Like, I don't know, the drivers only used to have one hat design a season, and now they'll have special hats for my for like Miami, for example. But it's the same with helmets, isn't it? Because again, you used to have maybe a driver would have a special one for the home Grand Prix, but now it's become much more frequent. It's lovely. It's a fun thing, but drivers have their own helmet. That's my design. And then they have some special ones like this one. Has that made people like you a lot more busy?
Yeah, it definitely has. I mean, I even noticed from when we first luckily got the break in F1 when George, Alex and Lando came in and brought us with. From then to now, the amount of, like, say, the more appreciation you get for pushing special designs, whether it's like on the marketing side of it, on the social side, it's blown up massively, even in 5 years. It's almost like, in keeping with how F1's gone a social boom, this has gone with it and the marketing side's gone with it. So it gives you a bit more things to like consider in, like when you get a list of special helmets in, what you think you're going to do for each one, how it's going to look, when you do the mini ones, because there's quite a few bits you have to tread a fine line sometimes. Like especially like certain parts and certain races, you can't have something that might be controversial, it might be borderline. You have to be thinking of all these things and obviously and to get a design that the driver wants and will stand out. So it's a bit of a balance in that, but it's all part of the fun. And it's basically my job to colour it in right there.
You say it's your job to sort of colour it in. At what point did you go, yeah, this is going to be my career. I'm going to design Formula One drivers' helmets.
I all started doing it when I was, it was like 2011, 2012. I always wanted my own painted helmet when I was karting. And the only way I could afford it was literally doing designs for people. And then I'd save up, buy my own and go from there. I didn't actually have my heart set on doing it as a career. I've always been like quite good at art and stuff like that because originally I wanted to be an engineer. But what happened was in my final year of uni at Christmas time, I actually got ran over by a drunk driver. And so all my placement opportunities and interviews for the new year, basically I couldn't go to anyone because I was in a sling and had all this damage done to me. So it was either a question of, do I do another year? Do I do a master's or do I just take a punt on this? I took a punt on it and it's been going quite well since. I think I was lucky that I always dealt with quite a lot of people in the community, so I had a base and it's just kind of snowballed from there, really.
Miles, that's unbelievable. How do you reflect on that looking back? Because, you know, that must have been an unbelievably traumatic experience.
Everything happens for a reason. It's one of those where, if I could go back, obviously, I'd rather not have been hit by the car and go through all the bits and bobs
yeah,
of it.
I understand that logic. Yeah, yeah, sure.
But it's like, you kind of look back on it and you think of like what I've done the last few years, compared to like what I'd done, like maybe come through the ranks. I think it probably was a better, more of a natural thing to go into. Almost like in control of your own destiny, all the main pressure I put on myself is really from like myself to deliver this for people, which is, it's kind of like, it's almost like a dream scenario in that aspect, if you get me. Set your own goals and pushing for different areas like that. So yeah, obviously it's one of those, I did on my heart set engineering, I still do like engineering. But this, it just feels a lot more natural in the long run how it's come to this point, really.
Unbelievable. How long's it take from start to finish, Miles? Say, like, Alex's Panda one, when it's from the idea to actually it's being on a race helmet. What's that time frame?
Yeah, the whole process, I'd say, it started in, was it start of February, I think we started working on it. And then it all got approved, the start of March. The things that often delay it, it might be, say, when it comes in, at the busiest time of the year, because what I have to be careful to do in my position is, because I do it for a living, obviously, you don't want to put everything on one side just to get the F1 stuff in, because even though it's great and obviously your main marketing, you can't afford to let down the bread and butter that basically funds your livelihood. So we do a lot of the F1 stuff will be either at night or on the weekends, and it's just that balance and that for me, especially between, say, like December and March, just to get everything done and from there.
Favourite helmet that you've ever designed?
Favourite one I've designed... probably Fernando's Japan one last year.
Yes, I do remember that. That was very cool.
That took a lot of time. It was one because he wanted to use the samurai tattoo. And obviously, there's no artwork for it. So you imagine I had to literally sit there with a picture of Fernando's back and like recreate the entire thing to get that on.
Oh my God.
That went down really well. I really like that one. I really like Alex's Panda one. I'd probably say that second, and then probably Lando's basketball for a third.
Within an era at the moment, Miles, of with F1 car livery design, they're a bit more boring than they used to be, because say like in the past where you had chrome McLaren or a yellow Jordan, you know, white paint was heavy and you used to have an all white car in a Stewart, but you can't have that anymore, or Braun GP. Do you ever fall into those restrictions where, because brighter, bolder colours with car livery paint is heavier, do you ever have those issues?
To be fair, a lot of the painters, they're very good at getting a lot of design on a helmet with minimal weight.
That's good.
I think a lot of it, like I say, obviously I get a lot of the credit for doing the design and stuff, but a lot of it goes more towards the painter, because some of the deadlines that some of them have are honestly outrageous. And if you see how much time they have to put into it, my job by comparison is really easy. I just, literally, like I said before, it's colouring it in, sending the artwork over. Like when the painters do it, they have to consider, like I say, the weight of it, the time of getting it all ready, because sometimes they have to do two or three for one race. And if you imagine you got, say, like, let's, for example, let's take, when you get a chrome helmet, you have to send it off to be applied by a third party, get it back, make sure there's nothing wrong with it, prepare it, paint it, make two or three exactly the same and send them out in sometimes insane timescales.
Yeah, of course. God, we love finding out like the different jobs in the world of Formula One, and you do a job that I wouldn't have ever thought of.
No, it's fantastic. And it's such a talent and it's such a skill. And also it brings so much fun to it because F1's such a serious business. It's a multi-million pound business, but it's so important to have some fun with it.
Just quickly, Miles, Greg James, who's our team principal, also the host of Radio One Breakfast, cycles around London a lot, and he obviously has to wear a helmet because he's a good person.
He's always carrying a helmet, isn't he?
Always carrying a helmet. If you had to design a Fast and the Curious helmet, what would it look like?
See that colour in the back? Just that, yeah. All over.
Oh,
you'll definitely
nice.
Be seeing that. In fact, you'd do the whole gear for him, wouldn't you? You'd do the jersey and everything, make the bike the same colour.
Yeah.
Make me visible at the end of the day, wouldn't you?
Oh,
yeah,
pink's
exactly.
My favourite colour. I love the colour pink, so I'd go with that. I'd have that all day long. It's great.
Good.
Why is that funny?
Well, Miles can make one for you as well, then. Is that what you're getting at?
No, I just saying I like the man's design.
You want full team gear. We'll wear it all there.
Yeah, well, I completely agree, Miles.
I agree. That would look very cool. Or maybe a bit much, but I don't know. Well, we could do it.
Miles, thank you so much for coming on. Honestly, it's so cool what you do and so interesting to get another little perspective into Formula One. We really appreciate it, Miles. Thank you so much.
What's all? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Miles. Bye.
Miles, cheers. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Excellent helmet chat there, I thought. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, and we forgot to ask him to design you your
Golden Retriever helmet. That's a shame. Next time.
We'll tweet him.
We're about to head into our second sprint race weekend of the season, which is Miami. If you're not fully up to speed on what sprint races are, they're a sort of 100-kilometre dash that happen ahead of the main race, and they do count towards the Drivers' Championship, but you get fewer points for winning. Off the back of the first one in China, I thought it'd be a good idea to have a chat about them, because people having a chat about them annoyed me. Now, I'm not sure there's massive logic there, but before China happened, there was still the debate on whether sprint races are a thing. And I was like, oh, come on. Well, they've been around for ages now.
Get over it now.
They're not going anywhere. But you're a newer to Formula One fan, the whole premise of this podcast, and they're four fans. Do you like them?
I am a massive sports fan, generally.
Yes.
So I love exciting moments. I love tense moments. I love on the edge of your seat moments. And I love competitive sport. And sometimes Formula One doesn't always completely give you that in a normal Grand Prix weekend.
Well, and that's to be fair, isn't it? You can get a dull football match.
Of course you can. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
No. I completely agree with you.
So I think I don't mind them. I think they can be quite exciting. And I think we saw a brilliant one in China.
Well, so we saw a brilliant one in China with some phenomenal racing. That was some of the best racing we've seen in a long time, I thought. The alternative of not having that is two more free practice sessions.
Yeah. And
so
why would you not?
And I saw people on social media saying, well, I don't think you need them. We don't need chocolate milkshake, but I'm glad it exists. You don't need Formula One. Of course, you don't need a sprint race. But I wouldn't want them for 12 of the 24 races.
Yeah.
I think six is a great number. And I think using them at the right track's key. I wouldn't necessarily have Miami as a sprint race track. So if we get a boring sprint race in Miami, maybe we could say that wasn't a great choice. It doesn't strike me as a sprint race track. I hope I'm wrong. I might be wrong. But yeah, all right, you don't need it. But why would you have not wanted that race to have happened? And let me answer my own question, which I'm good at on this podcast. A lot of people say, well, it's too much of a preview to what's happening in the main Grand Prix. But it isn't now.
No.
Because you can change your setup after the sprint race. We explained this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? Parc Fermé opening. So Parc Fermé, you can change your car after sprint qualifying and sprint race to have a different setup going into race qualifying and the main race. So take Lewis Hamilton, for example. He had a brilliant sprint, changed his setup, went wrong and had an awful race. So you don't know. It's not a preview. So I just, I don't quite get the hate for them. And I just sort of think, embrace, they're here now. They're not going anywhere.
I agree. And I think a lot of sort of classic, in any sport, you get those fans that have been a fan of the sport for years and years and years and years.
Like T20 cricket.
And they hate change.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's just got to be change. And when it's there, sometimes you've just got to accept it. The only thing that I think is a potential issue with them, and I don't know the, you know, the ins and outs of this, so I'd be interested to know what you think.
I'll tell you what.
But
I
saw that Lando Norris said after China that the main issue is the toll on the mechanics, the engineers, it's not healthy, it's not sustainable, it puts them under a huge amount of pressure. And obviously that's not ideal.
No, I think if I saw that Lando interview, like I think I did, and I'm talking about the same interview, I think he was saying that in context of not just sprint races, but also the fact there's 24 races in a season.
Yeah.
And it's such a long season. And I think he was saying, you know, with 24 races and sprints, it's a lot.
That was it, yeah. Because it puts them under more pressure on that weekend to be able to adapt to the sprint race as well.
Totally get that. That is an ongoing discussion in Formula One about how we look after the team members for 24 races and the drivers themselves. And I think personally, it's a bit long, 24 races. But yeah, totally get that. Lando's right as ever. That's something we need to look at. But I do like, one of the things they've done this year is move the order around. And that's so much better. It was bizarre before to have race qualifying on Friday and then go, that's qualifying for the Grand Prix. Forget that. We'll come back to that Sunday. Now let's do another qualifying of the sprint. This is so much more of a logical order that we get sprint qualifying, sprint race, then that's done. Lovely.
Yeah, draw a line.
I think this is the right sprint format. I'm glad they're there. So yeah, I still don't quite get the hate for the sprint, because the alternative is, it's a bonus. You don't have to watch it. It's not loads of championship points. You can catch up really quickly. I just don't really get the hate for it. I think we're in agreement on that. But we've been talking to people on Instagram, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. So we asked everyone on Instagram what they thought. And most people like a good old sprint race. People like Nick and Simon were saying that they love the extra action and like the way that it's been changed up this year. But we had a question from Molly that I think is actually links us onto a bit of a bigger talking point in Formula One at the moment around how points are given out. So she says, during the race in China, it was mentioned that there are plans to discuss extending points to further down the grid up to 12th place. Do you think this is something that will be introduced? And if so, how do you feel about it?
I like it because we're in an era at the moment. So it would be the same point structure, but then I haven't got it in front of me, but it would then go down to 12 and it would go 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, rather than what it is at the moment, going to 10th. I like that because we're in an era at the moment where, at the moment, off the top of my head, Williams, Sauber and Alpine haven't got any points. The reality is Haas and RB won't get loads of points this season. So it's much easier to tell a story for those constructors and those drivers if there's more points being awarded. Because, for example, the last weekend in China, Alpine's good result pushed them higher in the constructor standings than Sauber. Now, that's because it goes on place finishes when points aren't awarded. It's much easier to explain that if there's lower down points. So that's why I like it. And do you know who's changed my opinion on this issue of points more widely? And they're not going to do this, by the way, but it's David Croft, our good friend Crofty, who's been a guest on this podcast. And I was a guest on the Sky Sports F1 podcast this week. And Crofty said, I heard him say this in commentary, and he was like, why don't we give points much lower down? And I was like, no, F1 points should be sacred. You know, they shouldn't just be given out just for finishing. And Crofty said, well, no, but then, you know, the battle, it's something to race for all 20 drivers. If you've got, we want to create storylines up and down, then if you've got Sargeant trying to pass Zhou for 17th, and that's more points than 16th, that's more of a reason to race. And I was like, yeah. So I think F1's got to move with the times. And actually, this is the, and also adapt to the era we're in. And we're in an era where, for outside the big boys, points are hard to come by. So I didn't like this at first, but I like it. And I'd potentially go even further, like Crofty says.
Yeah, and I think we need to embrace battles at the bottom.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's an important part of sport generally, any sport.
Would have been a good name for this podcast, wouldn't it? Battles at the bottom.
Very interesting. More points, I reckon. I've enjoyed this. Thank you very much, Christian.
You're most welcome. It's been a lovely episode, haven't we? We've covered a veritable smorgasbord of subjects.
Mm, and you're off to Miami soon.
Yeah, I am off to Miami first thing Tuesday morning after this podcast goes out. So I'll be on the ground and reporting back for Team Fast and Curious. We've already said one guest who we're hoping to speak to, not 100% confirmed because there's a lot of moving plans and parts in an F1 weekend. We're hoping to speak to Logan Sargeant. I've also got someone else up my sleeve who I might have arranged a chat with. I'm not going to say it yet, but it's if it happens, quite a big one. So
exciting.
I'm going to be in Miami. I'll report back and we've got some good guests lined up. And as well as those two I'm mentioning, we've also got Leah Block ahead of what is her home race from F1 Academy. If you've been following this podcast since before the season started, we caught up with Leah just before Christmas, one of the two, and I went to the Williams factory to talk to her. She's Williams' representative in F1 Academy. She's American, so it's not just Logan who's got a home race this weekend, it's Leah. So we're going to talk to Leah and hopefully Logan as well.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear from her. Have an amazing time.
Thank you.
Safe travels.
I'm really excited, not least to go to an F1 race, and it's a brilliant F1 race to go to. I know how lucky I am, but also because the weather, it's disgusting how cold it is in the UK
at
the moment.
Yeah, I'm so jealous.
And I'm really, frankly, I'm sick of it.
I'm so jealous.
I think I need to have a word with the Met Office, so I'm just looking forward to some sun.
Yeah.
And to wear some bright floral. Everybody wears floral in Miami. That's a thing.
Mm.
So
right up your street.
My street. High camp. We love it.
Anyway, if anyone's got any questions for Christian about Miami, get in touch at Fast Curious Pod. We're on Insta. We're on TikTok.
And the YouTube now.
We're on the YouTube.
On the
and
YouTube.
We're on X, formerly known as Twitter. So get in touch. Thank you so much for listening and watching. We'll speak to you soon. Bye.